What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you had a happy time during your holiday season, or that you all just survived them in general, and look forward to this being the longest amount of time until the next time you have to celebrate this time of year. Like me, like tax season. Oh God, it's tax season now, isn't it?
You just went right into downer mode.
I did.
Tax season. Boo.
But it's 2024. Yeah.
Hey.
Happy New Year!
Let's talk about happy things then. Let's shift John's gears immediately and let's talk about our favorite movies that we watched in 2023 before we kick things off with new movies starting next week in 2024, which is this week. But next week's when time, man. No wonder Marvel can't get like time travel right. It's confusing. So in the meantime, let's just talk about movies because that's why you're listening. We are going to run down our favorite top five movies that we watched in 2023. Yeah, folks, you know, just so you know, from behind the scenes, I just cut out a lot of stuff that you're not going to hear. So instead, I'm just going to roll right into Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to help us discuss the disgusting, you know her as lead movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Happy New Year.
2024 has not started out well for me.
No.
No, it's okay.
You're doing fine.
I'm fine. Great. It's fine. It's fine.
You have a leaf blower on your stump. It's fine. Please listen to the last episode for context. Otherwise, that's going to sound terrible.
If this is your first episode, good luck. You know her from her YouTube channel and website, Real Queen of Horror, Infant Love for the Genre, Xena Dixon. Hey, Xena.
Hello, it's me. Happy 2024.
And I'm John. We finally got through it so we can talk about our favorite movies that we saw last year.
You're doing it, Peter.
As we have always done in the past, our top five movies, as well as some runners-up, will be mentioned. These aren't necessarily movies that were only from 2023. They are just movies that we saw for the first time in 2023, which is very helpful for me. So let's just get right into things. I'm going to say no particular order because my list is no particular order. It's so tough to suddenly say what your favorite was.
It sure is. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, these are just my top favorites. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, there's a bunch more to that.
Conservatively speaking, if we each do two a week, we each conservatively watch 100 horror movies just that we talk about in a year, let alone all the ones we don't talk about in the year. So, yeah, we'll just do our no particular order. And I'm going to totally not go first. Megan, what's your first of your top five favorites? And we will do our runners up too at the end.
So this pick, you know, we talk a lot, well, not we specifically, but in general, I see a discourse online about the, you know, the theatrical experience and how that's very different for a lot of people, and usually negative. But there's still a lot of magic when you find the right crowd when you're watching a movie.
I think
on
I know
screen.
Where you're going with this one.
And yeah, you probably do. And so for me, like this could not have not been in my top for a variety of reasons, but especially because that crowd just made that movie just like it took it to the next level. And that's The Blackening.
Yep.
Yeah, that was on Tim's... my list too.
Is it? See, we can share. But yeah, directed by Tim Story, written by Dwayne Perkins and Tracy Oliver. It is a Juneteenth set horror comedy, kind of dissecting the tropes. You know, what if the black guy dies first, but they're all black? Then who goes? And it's such a funny movie. It is such a funny movie. I think I, you know, if I'd watched this renting it at home, I would have still been laughing. But when you have the entire audience like hooting and hollering and just having the greatest time of their lives, it's infectious. And there's something magical about everybody, a crowd in a big theater singing the O'Reilly Auto Parts jingle with the movie that you just can't really replicate. So for the movie being a joy and for getting to experience the joy it brought to a crowded theater, it's in my top five.
Yeah, I could not agree more. This is a theater experience. That in the right theater with the right crowd, it was so much more enjoyable.
Absolutely.
I kind of feel bad for people who saw it for the first time streaming or on demand or something. That
yeah,
I mean, it's still a good movie.
We still had fun. We still oh, had yeah. a good it, time.
Yeah. It's still a really good movie, by absolute without a doubt. But the theater experience was definitely a unique one that made it a lot more enjoyable too.
Absolutely.
That'd be Xena.
Okay, well, I was going to say The Blackening, too.
Well, you can.
You can.
It's
you
fine,
weigh in.
Yeah.
Okay. You
all right, yeah. I really, really love the movie as well. For some reason, again, like my theater near me, there's two theaters near me. None of them, they were playing it. But even with like some other movies, for some reason, they weren't playing it. Or when they were, it was just like, who goes to, it's 5 o'clock. But anyway, point is, I really, really love the movie. I had a lot of fun with it. I thought that it was hilarious. One of my favorite scenes, this really isn't there's a lot of favorite scenes, but one where it's like, I literally had tears was this woman. She gets slapped and it was like, you felt the slap, but someone actually comments on it. And it's like, they never really do that in horror movies. They just keep it going. And it's true. Yeah. Like that looked very painful. Are you okay? Like, so yeah, it's a lot of fun. A really funny movie.
It is. John.
So I also have Blackening on my list, but it's a runner-up. It's not a top five.
But still calling it a Dark Trio approved.
Without a doubt. It was a very close runner-up. The other ones on my list just kind of edged it out. Also, in the number of times I watched them. I'm going to start with one that would surprise no one if they heard the episode from about a month ago or so. And I'm going to start with Talk to Me. It's so much that I went out and got the hand horror prop that wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be when it showed up, but you know what? I'm going to enjoy it anyway. If you know, you know. And it was a familiar, like I said before, it's a new twist on something familiar, but it's original and it's not familiar. And one of the best endings of a horror movie that I've seen in a long time, that it just really encapsulated and pulled everything together. Great acting from, as far as my knowledge is concerned, unknown actors. I'm sure they're more well known in like New Zealand, Australia. Really creepy effects, some really brutal effects.
Yeah.
That great portrayal of hell that I talked about in the deep dive. If you haven't listened to it, go watch Talk to Me first and then check out our deep dive. But yeah, definitely one of my favorites. I almost watched it again the other day. It's just good stuff.
It's just good stuff.
Yeah, it worked for me on all levels.
Awesome.
All right, number two, Megan.
So this one, I watched technically last year. at a festival, and then it finally released this year. It's still, I love it, and I wish more people were talking about it. Some are. It was acquired by Screambox. It's The Outwaters. Robbie Banfitch's The Outwaters. That came out pretty close with Skinamarink. Skinamarink hit this year first, and then The Outwaters. John has got a very confused look on his face.
When I was making my list, I was like, I could have swore that I talked about The Outwaters last year. Did that just come out this year?
Yeah, it released on, you saw it at a fest screening.
That's what it was. I put it on
last
year's list, but it hadn't officially been released yet. Okay.
Yeah, now it's officially out. It's on Screenbox, Blu-ray, all sorts of things. But as far as like the really experimental kind of, I don't want to say liminal space because I don't think Outwaters is quite that, but you know, it's often paired in conversation with Skinamarink because they're both released in close proximity. Both are found footagey. Both are very kind of out there as far as conventional horror goes. But I prefer this to Skinamarink just because for me, somebody described Skinamarink as like a gulag. Like something you put on and it's like what happened. It's not really a story narrative. It's just things that are spooky on screen kind of. That's how I feel about Skinamarink. So no, I know it's beloved, but I like the journey of The Outwaters and I like how visceral it does get. It is a little bit of a slow burn. It takes a while and then it really cuts loose for like a very long time. Which is bold. It usually found footage slow burn or slow burn in general. It's like 2/3 of a slow build up and then a payoff. And this one is like good 45 minutes of insanity and gore. Very cosmic horror-y. And I really like it. So, yeah, I thought I would make sure that that was on radars.
Nice. Yes. How about you, Zena?
I'm going to go with Project Wolf Hunting. I had... a lot of fun with this one. I love how bloody it is. I think I described it as Con Air meets The Sadness with a dabble of Resident Evil. Probably one of the bloodiest horror movies that I've ever seen. And I just love the energy. It has high energy. I don't feel like there's ever a dull moment. And I feel like even if you're someone who's not really into horror, I still feel like you'll enjoy this one if you can tolerate the blood a little bit.
A little bit action bender,
Yeah.
A lot of blood, a lot of arterial spray.
I wasn't sure when I was going to bring this up, but technically Megan already brought it up. Because Outwaters wasn't on my list because it was last year, instead Skinamarink is.
There you go. We got a pair.
Now, a lot like Outwaters, like when I first saw Outwaters, I messaged the creator on Instagram because as a found footage fan, I'm not going to say I appreciated it more by any means, because that's also just a really conceited thing to say about anything. But the way they didn't lean into the tropes of traditional found footage and some of the complaints, frankly, that I've had about found footage, and they completely circumvent all those was brilliant. I love Outwaters. And if you follow Outwaters on Instagram, they're still getting publicity. They're still getting write-ups. They're still getting noticed. I love it. More power to them. But I also understand how people would watch that and be like, you love it or hate it. I don't think there's a lot in between. And I think Skinamarink is an even bigger example of that. You either love it or you hate it. I haven't met a whole lot of people personally who enjoyed Skinamarink. I think I don't have a good reason why I like it so much. Maybe because it was unexpected. Maybe it just hit me in the right feels that the continuing feeling of dread and abandonment is really terrifying to me. Maybe it hits to some memories or something from childhood. I don't know. The simplicity of it. I think gulag is actually a perfect way to describe it, because I would absolutely put this on in the background if I was trying to get like motivated to write something really disturbing or unnerving to like try and put myself in that headspace. Like, what's that really messed up black and white movie? It's on YouTube. Begotten.
Are you talking about Begotten?
Yeah, Begotten. I think I said this on the podcast before. There was a book I read a while ago that the author, he got into the headspace to write his book by basically watching Begotten on a loop. Like, that's all he watched. And he kind of got him in this really messed up headspace to write it. Like, that's what Skinamarink would do to me. It's very minimalist, but it's also kind of broken in this weird sense. I don't know. I don't have a good way of describing it. It gives me the right feels for horror in a way that I didn't think horror movies would do. And I think that's part of what I appreciate. We watch so much horror. Sometimes I just really love seeing something that I don't expect. Kind of like Mad God, where it's like, oh God, this is so messed up. I love it. Yeah. Skinamarink, if 99% of you disagree with me on that one, I get it. I don't blame you. I just really like it. How about you? So are we up to number three?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Number three, Megan.
Did Zeta have, what was she had blackening in? Oh, Project Wolf Honey. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. Next one. Another one that I saw the first time and I was just so, it was almost like being on a roller coaster with how well done the chase sequences were and the horror of it was. And that was Scream 6.
Nice.
Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin and Tyler Gillette's continuation from Scream 5, I thought was such a nice progression of 5. The core 4 you really loved way more. I think that they were introduced and they're charming, but 6 is where you're like, yeah, I'm on board, core 4. The chase sequences were so good. There was the whole ladder between, you know, over the alleyway that just had me breathless. I liked how it was working in unison, or really in conversation with Scream 2. So I think rewatches kind of makes that climax a little bit clearer and stronger than maybe the first watch of what you're expecting. I have no clue, no comment on where the heck this franchise goes from here. But for Bettinelli-Ulpin and Gillette, for this kind of being the last entry that they are touching, they did such a phenomenal job. And I had such a good time watching this movie.
I did see a gripe recently about with all the to-do that's going on with the Scream franchise that we've intentionally neglected to talk about on the show, just because we're not going to put our two cents in about it. It is what it is, what's going on with Scream. But someone basically saying, you can't do Gale Weathers like that. You can't stop the franchise now. You can't stop her character now. She survived 6 movies. You can't, spoilers. Like, you can't have her just survive off screen and then just be done with her after all this. Like, she has to have more than that. If for no one else, then for Gale.
Gale.
Justice for Gale. Kirby got justice. Give justice to Gale.
Right.
All right, number three, Xena.
I'm going to go with Sick. The slasher movie, it premiered at a festival, but it actually premiered also on Peacock.
Yeah.
Earlier this year. And oh my gosh, I just fell in love with it. It's like a slasher that has an actual chase scene, like an actual like fun. Like,
we love our chase scenes. Yeah.
It was just like you're on the edge of your seat the whole time, you know, and it was just cool just to how they wrapped everything around. I personally didn't really know what was going to happen with it. So I just loved that it was just fun. So, but yeah, if you're looking for like a survival slasher, I feel like this is the one for you.
Nice. I am going to go with, I'll save the last two. They might be slightly surprising, maybe not given my particular, my past history. Number three is going to be Pearl. For me, because it's Pearl. It's
Pearl.
Yeah, it's the X franchise. I mean, if you want to call it, I guess it would it be the Pearl franchise or the X franchise?
The Mia Goth trilogy.
I suppose the Mia Goth trilogy. If nothing else, the trilogy itself has introduced me to Mia Goth, which obviously I've seen more of her in Infinity Pool, which she's fantastic in that too, and she may
very much, yeah.
She may be already the top or like on like female horror Mount Rushmore for me, for as far as like actresses or actors are concerned, not even female, just across the board. She's fantastic. The range of emotion between like vulnerability and innocence and sheer terrifying psychopathy. All of a sudden, just that turn and just like the like the acting she does with her eyes is amazing. Like, you feel, like, I feel it. I don't know if she's method, if she's not. Wow. If she can just turn that on and off and be those characters, it's fantastic. Yeah. Like, it's wild and visceral, and it's just, it's gonna, to me, it'll probably go down as one of the best, at least trilogies in horror history, like, with what they've accomplished so far. So,
and Maxine isn't even out yet.
I know, like, Maxine would really have to drop the ball at this point. I mean, the fact, when you make a second in a trilogy that strong, usually the second ones aren't as strong, and it's pretty damn good. All right, round four.
Round four. Apparently, it's been a very strong year for slashers. So I'm going with Thanksgiving. Eli Roth's Thanksgiving is returned to slashers, or I guess the early aughts. It's not a whole lot like the Grindhouse trailer by design, but it's just refreshing to have this meat and potatoes slasher. I feel like we've kind of entered the era, or we've been in the era, where everything has to have some kind of a novel or high concept twist, you know, because they want to keep audiences, especially savvy horror fans, surprised. So they're like, what if we merge this slasher with Back to the Future, or merge the slasher with Groundhog Day? And there's something really refreshing about just, here's an original killer, and he's just killing people out of vengeance. And so you have this very classic 80s sensible kind of, like, sensibilities, but with a contemporary style that is really nice and refreshing. And the chase sequences were well done. There's a lot of great set pieces. You know, with Roth directing, it's a whole lot of gory kills, which is what you want. And so it kind of scratched that itch for me, and I really enjoyed it.
Good choice.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare, features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Xena?
Thank you. I didn't want to just go. You didn't say anything.
Oh, please, by all means, you don't have to wait for me.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with Appendage. Basically, it's about this woman who works in fashion, and she has a lot of anxiety. She's very stressed out, and it forms into something that is very much Basket Case. And I really enjoyed this one. I love the way the film looks. I love the acting in it. I feel like it didn't go in the direction that I thought that it was going to go, but I feel like it didn't. I'm trying to, like, speak around it, because I don't want to waste time, but I don't want to spoil it. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it's the type of movie that does not waste time. So I want to say within the first 15 minutes or so, something gross happens, and I'm here for it. So if you're someone who likes surprises and you like body horror, and hey, you like fashion too, like me, you should check this movie out.
To all filmmakers out there, if you're looking for a Xena approved pick, gross and horror, or in fashion, and you win.
Yep.
Yeah. Witches. Throw a witch in there.
Throw a witch in there.
Doing some witchy things.
Even in the background. Stirring a cauldron, go old school. That's fine. Number four, I'm going to have to go with Bones and All, which was assigned to me. I think Megan assigned that one to me.
Yeah.
It was, which was also 2023, wasn't it? It just came out this year. It was 2022, came out. It's not that it's hard to describe, but for some reason it's hard for me to describe why I like it so much. It's like coming of age horror, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, to me, I had mentioned when I originally reviewed it or talked about it, that it had this almost near dark feel to me, like, because it's also kind of road trippy, like you're kind of on the road, on the run, trying to figure out how to live while being pursued. And it's like, it's simple. It's not big, but it feels, I don't know. It always feels ominous. There's always something where it feels like this isn't going to go well. Something bad's going to happen. And the sheer nature of the characters, bad things have to happen. But also the performance of Mark Rylance, who plays Sully in it, is so fantastically disturbing. It is so, because it's so quiet and unassuming and almost gentle and freaking terrifying at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And just this life that they live is, ugh, like, it's an absolutely beautiful movie that is utterly, it's like heartfelt and disturbing. And I don't know, like, it worked a lot for me. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with this one across the board. Like, it's such a fantastic movie. Not a constant rotation movie for me. I would watch Skinamarink over this one. I need to be in the right mood for this one. But it's,
you need the Gulag, not the heady emotional one. Yeah,
yes.
I get it.
But this is one I would this is definitely one I would recommend to people who don't even like horror in the first place, especially if they have any sort of art house leanings or they just want to appreciate a performance and cinematography and things like that. It's a absolutely beautiful movie. All right, last round before the runners ups.
No one will save you.
Yeah,
Brian Duffield's, he's very surprising in how he approaches genre movies in general, and really getting emotions out of them. So this one, Caitlin Dever stars as a woman who is ostracized in her little quaint little town. Doesn't really tell you why at first. You feel for her, though. And then, you know, aliens invade. And the way that he delivers an alien invasion movie, it's very classic as far as you've got the gray aliens and they beam people up, Scotty. They do a lot of other things, but there's a hierarchy to them and it's very thrilling. It's a whole lot of intensity and suspense in her trying to evade this invasion, and the surprises that it throws at you. But there's a hierarchy to them too, that you know that there's a whole other language there that we're never going to be privy to, because we are not aliens, I don't think.
As far as you know.
But yeah, and then he does this with so little dialogue.
Yeah.
When it reveals why she's ostracized, it's not some little trite thing. Mm. It's not like, oopsie, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then where her journey ends is the type of ballsiness that's going to either make people be like, no, or, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm that. But yeah, it's really impressive. It's a really impressive genre sci-fi horror movie.
This one was on my runners-up, too. And I still don't know how I feel about the ending. I'm still working on it. All right, Xena, number five.
It was really hard. But Sister Death, because I love Veronica, so this is the prequel. And man, like, this is just one of those satisfying movies that fit in with the franchise for me. I love the tone of it. I love how creepy it feels. There's a lot of demonic, horrible things that go on in this movie that I just cannot get enough of. And plus, I love the director, Paco Palazzo, so I'll watch anything he puts out.
Yeah.
And this is probably my absolute strangest, seemingly out of nowhere pick that is completely overlooking two that longtime listeners of the show would think would be layups for me. And I'm going to say Southbound. the anthology horror that I got assigned this year. I rewatched it again a couple of weeks ago. This is anthology horror. Like, this is how you do anthology horror. The wraparound, the storytelling, the acting, the story in the hospital is still just, no pun intended, just gut-wrenching. And I loved it all, the tone of it all. I don't know how to put into words how this captures it in a way. As much as I enjoyed VHS 85, and I'll talk about that later in our runners up, the way it encapsulated the wraparound just to work across the board. Like, that's the hard, I think we talk about that a lot, that the wraparound tends to be a weak link in anthology horror. It's just a way to get from one story to another, but this actually encapsulates it all. And the stories just flow together. It's not, let's watch a new video. Let's whatever contrivance or convenience or whatever you want to call it. It's all just kind of happening around. Like, this is what's going on in this area, this concept. And I think this has quickly become one of my all time favorite anthology horror movies, if not my favorite. It's so good. I like it so much. I want more like this. I'm going to go watch it later. All right. So before we get to runners up, let's each one of us just go through our top five in no particular order. Just a quick recap, and then we'll kind of dive into our runners up.
Okay. We'll start with you, Megan. So top five: Outwaters, Scream 6, The Blackening, No One Will Save You, and Thanksgiving.
Zena?
Okay. So I have The Blackening, Project Wolf Hunting, Sick, Appendage, and Sister Death.
And I had Talk to Me, Skinamarink, Pearl, Bones and All, and Southbound. All right. I have a lot of runners up. And I know I already talked about two of them. Do we want to do any round? How do we want to do this? We want to do it like round the table again? Just kind of keep going as if they were a part of the list?
Up to you. I didn't do too many.
Okay. What do you think, Zena?
I was just going to say, how about we just go through the list? Because I have a good amount as well.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And we can totally stop and chat if any of us have feels about any of them.
Yeah.
Why don't we just do that? Why don't we start with you, Megan?
So runner up, I also had Talk to Me on my list. And then The Last Voyage of the Demeter, I feel like is a really good movie that might have been too much of an ask for theaters, just because it's a period movie. It's also a period movie that has Dracula on a boat, which dominated the conversation. But I think it's a really good movie that people are going to discover. You know, not that Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula was not a big hit, but I feel like it's that type of thing where people will come around on it later and realize that we don't get a whole lot of huge budget movies of this scale. And Andre Uvdahl did an amazing job directing it, making this feel really vast and epic-sized, and then slowly making it extremely claustrophobic. Javier Botet was an amazing Dracula. I just thought it was overall a very solid movie that I had a great time with, and the craft was just impeccable, and I feel like it's going to be ripe for discovery whenever audiences are ready.
I always feel a little bad for those filmmakers. A little bad.
Yeah.
Like, I hope... Yeah. Because obviously... I was talking to my wife about this not too long ago. I saw some comment on some Instagram movie, whatever, where someone's like, oh, that's 90 minutes of my life I'll never get back. That is quickly turning into the dumbest thing that I can hear anyone say. Like, I'm sorry. You spent 90 minutes of your life, probably for free, if it's streaming, if it's torrents, whatever. These people dedicated part of their lives to building it.
Yeah.
The people who wrote it, who directed it, who acted in it, who the grips, the catering, the transportation, the assistance. And you're arguing about 90 minutes of your life for a movie you could have shut off.
Yeah.
Like, I sincerely hope that there has been a shift, or there is a shift, in people pulling back, just being like, you know what? I didn't enjoy this. Or not commenting at all. And then so filmmakers can at least hear the people who enjoyed it. And then if people find it down the line, it just makes them feel better instead of, oh my God, I ruined my life because of the $60 million movie that didn't work out. And all I heard was how much people hated it. And then I hope that it's solace two, three, five, 10 years down the line when they hear that and it doesn't turn into, well, where the hell were you 10 years ago when people were making me feel like crap? You know, like I sincerely hope that people find it. And Andre Avdal is such a fantastic director. Anyway.
He is. The cast is great. The kills are brutal. There's really good kills. I just think it being a period piece and it being a Dracula story, like it's really amounts to maybe a page or two out of Dracula.
Yeah,
chapter, but short. Yeah, it's short, but he makes it a full story. But I think, you know, to your point, I can't help but I always think of this. Did you ever see Wolfman's Got Nards, documentary?
Oh, I never saw the documentary.
Squad?
No.
Yeah, it's really good. It's basically tracking how it became like such this cult favorite. And Fred Dekker at some point is like, what good does this do me now?
Yeah.
And it sucks, you know, like not that he's not appreciative. And you see that with John Carpenter all the time, too. Like, great that. That's great. Doesn't do me any good now because the movie's the thing bombed. So he didn't get to do the next movie he wanted to do and, you know, bounce back luckily with like Christine and stuff. But yeah, it's like it does impact their careers currently. And that's not money. Like, it's great that we love to reappraise horror movies every by the fifth year, everybody's going to probably discover this for the first time. And yeah, so it'd be great then. Would have been nice now.
Yeah,
but we'll take it.
Like, and I understand that if a movie doesn't do well in the theaters, they have to deal with that. And that's going to affect their careers anyway. But the fact that in the age of social media, now you have to hear from everyone who has to weigh in about how they feel about like, oh my God, this was so dumb. Like, whatever. Just being terrible. Because as much as I like to think that there are directors like Steven Spielberg, who they release a movie and they just go on vacation. They don't look at the numbers or the reviews or whatever. Some first-time director, they're just hoping you like the thing that they made. And they have to face this vitriol. Someone DMing them about how they're terrible. Like, that is brutal.
That's so annoying.
Social media has definitely changed the conversation.
It hasn't made people happier, that's for sure.
No, it hasn't.
No, it isn't. It doesn't. No. So, yeah. And then just the last honorable mention that I will throw out is Damian Rugna's When Evil Lurks. Because... man, talk about mean horror and a smart approach to possession horror. What if the church isn't even a factor? I feel like when you have possession horror, it often leads to exorcisms. And Rugna, who is behind Terrified, which I adore, is like, screw it. Church isn't involved. Church failed here. Let's go.
Boom.
So, love it.
All right, Zena, dive in.
Okay, so I have a lengthy one. So bonuses, they clone Tyrone. I know it's not really a horror, but it's sci-fi mystery, really.
And it's your list, so.
Yeah, it's your list.
I make the rules. So, yeah, I also had No One Will Save You as a bonus.
Yeah.
The Offering. Then I also have Jagged Mind and Dark Harvest, because Dark Harvest, it's one of those movies that's really dark, but the monsters look so cool.
Yeah.
Then show wise, I have a list for shows.
Oh, Sugar Bear, yes.
Yeah. So like, of course I have to have The Last of Us on there because
absolutely,
I feel like that show's amazing. Then I have Shelter, which I'm really like, why? It got canceled, guys.
Yeah.
They canceled it. And it was just like, I wish I could tell you. Like, literally, I know people say, oh, they left us, you know, on like a hanging edge. I know no one says that, but you get what I mean. Like they really did left us like leaving. Like if I could
they
just
dangled.
Tell you, like, okay. Anyway, then I also have School Spirits, which that one is not canceled. So yippee, you know, that one's coming back. And just in case if you haven't seen it, it's available on Netflix now. Then I also have Bargain, which I spoke about, I think it was last week or the week before.
Yeah.
And then Goosebumps, the new Goosebumps, because I just love the whole vibe of it. I love the fact that they were trying to create something new. You know, this new generation, they need something. Then old movies wise, because there was a lot of older movies that I watched this year that just the bee's knees. The Guardian, which is pure and utter insanity, you know. I have Night Visitor, which is basically kind of like Fright Night, except it's more with like a cult serial killer, but I'm living for it. I also have Hellhole, but technically that one came out, I think it came out last year, but I did watch it
a couple
years
ago, right? The Polish one on Netflix?
Yeah. So there's that one. Then I have The Hills Run Red with the, you know, the horror fans. They decide to go to the woods and, okay. Then I have The Harbinger, which I think I watched it this year, but it came out last year.
Okay. So,
that was my Outwaters thing. Yeah, I was confused too.
Yeah. And then I have Silent Rage. I didn't know that Chuck Norris was in a horror movie.
Surprise, surprise.
And then finally, I have Paul Dudd's Deadly Lunch Break. Basically, this guy, he goes on this show. It came out in 2021. He goes on this show that's kind of like America's Got Talent type of thing. And he wants to show what he can do, but he's having the worst day ever. And at this point, he just started killing everybody. And I'm rooting for him.
As one does. Yeah.
So that's what I have.
I have quite a few, too. And I feel like I'm forgetting stuff. I did my best to try and look back over what we watched over the last year. And I know that there's stuff that I'm forgetting. Mm-hmm. And I do apologize.
We should quick plug to Robert Prudhomme's Letterboxd. And I think I know you dropped that in the description notes. But man, what a nice, handy tool.
Yeah,
thank you.
Robert, on his own accord, has been so fantastic on Letterboxd. We have the link in the show notes. I always list him there. And he's so good at keeping up to date on all the movies that we've watched. So if you're ever wondering what we've watched.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Even with cover art, he uploads everything. He's doing such a great job. And I did my best to parse through and try and find my favorites. And I know I'm forgetting stuff. I'm sorry. Piggy was on my list. Mm-hmm. I think I saw that at the beginning of this year. I couldn't remember if it was this year or last year. Probably never watch it again because it's
a downer.
It's tough.
It's dark.
But it's what they did was nothing short of like amazing. VHS 85. I thought that it was a great anthology. Again, Southbound was just better for me. It's still knocking out of the park for me. Like the VHS series, if they keep turning out what they did in VHS 85 for the rest of the time, I'm never going to complain. Final Girls, that one, that was an assignment for both my wife and I to watch. And it kind of both took us both. We were a little surprised by how much we really enjoyed the heart and the humor and the simplicity but complexity to it, I guess, at the same time. It was a lot of fun. Grabbers, had a lot of fun watching Grabbers. It needs to be more Irish horror movies.
Where drinking is the key to survival.
Exactly. And then, like I mentioned, I had The Blackening on there and No One Will Save You. Hell House LLC, Carmichael Manor, is a runner-up. Yeah. Mostly because there's a couple of plot holes that it just couldn't get the top five for me because of just a couple of little things, but still very enjoyable.
Still, you loved it, yeah.
And I love the first one so much, and this one has come the closest to the first one for me. Livid, I kind of forgot I had watched Livid, but man, is that an atmospheric, kind of terrifyingly, again, visuals always get me in horror. Yeah. It doesn't need to be jump scares. It doesn't need to be any of that. If you have an eye for horror and you get, it's like, oh, I mean, just the ballerina typed it. Yeah. Oh, freaking, oh, gets me. So good. And then what did I have left? I think the, and I had a couple of short movies. One was 12 Kilometers, the Mike Pesci's kind of viral hit where he's asking you to send his top three horror movies and he'll send you a link to it. Really beautifully shot. It's based, I don't know if it's directly based, but it has to be on a very classic creepypasta about a hole to hell and people dropping a microphone down. I mean, it has to be. It's almost exactly that in the movie. It's really great. It's very, very beautifully shot. Go check them out on Instagram. Send them your three favorite horror movies and see it for yourself. And Never Hike Alone 2, in no small part because I am tangentially a part of Friday the 13th canon now. and the Never Hike Alone series is just fun. I love a good fan film. They're so fun when someone who really appreciates the series decides to have some fun with it. I really love that. It's because sometimes studios, they just don't get it, right? They don't understand why a movie was popular, and then they try to make another one, and you're like, you don't quite get why people liked this, do you?
You took the wrong lessons.
Yeah, exactly. You took this 50% over here. Like there was two hands. There was a red pill and a red pill and a blue pill, and you took the red pill. Like, no, that's not what we wanted. It was a great year for horror. I feel like 2022 was really good. Like that one was, it was really hard, but 2023 has still been turning out some really good stuff.
Horror thrives.
2022 had like great horror movies. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. We've been getting awesome horror all yeah. mm-hmm. around.
Yeah.
But I feel like 2022 had great horror movies, but I feel like 2023, there was some really great horror series that I know that I just had to like binge watch and stuff. So,
yeah, I need to catch up on some of it.
I know. And I still need to dig into some more Mike Flanagan
Wolf Like
myself.
Me.
Oh, Wolf Like Me. I did start Wolf Like Me. We started it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
good.
It's so hard to get into series sometimes. Like if you can't binge watch, if you only watch like one a day. Sometimes it's like, oh, what are you in the mood for? Well, let's watch Friends, which
watch
is horror in its own sense.
Werewolf rom-com.
It is cute. It's very cute. And I love Josh Gad. Like he can do no wrong for me. So yeah, it's a good year.
There you go.
Looking forward to what 2024 has to offer.
So much stuff is on the horizon. I love it.
Yeah, so much stuff. And frankly, just a general message to people out there, go watch horror, like new horror. Like people complain endlessly about Marvel and DCU cinematic universes and reboots and sequels, like, oh god, this is so, they're just doing the same. Then go watch the new stuff. Go to the go see Voyage of the Demeter.
You know? Oh yeah, for sure. But I do think that if people are listening, they probably are those people that are already going
I think to see so me. I think the people listening to this show are open-minded. There are people who
so
are
people
listening
who aren't listening.
Yeah,
listen to us and then go watch new horror.
Share this with someone who doesn't like horror or who's always complaining. We will give you plenty of references to non-sequels, reboots, and cinematic universes. They're out there and they're great. And people are working really hard to try and make horror mainstream. And it's as close as it's ever been. The actors that are coming into the horror space between the Skarsgårds and like Mia Goth and just these fantastic actors that the Academy isn't going to be able to ignore forever. They're so good.
Watch them try.
They'll try, but they're not going to be able to ignore the box offices forever because the box offices are really starting to show with some of these. So, yeah. And I think that's the Bloody Disgusting podcast for this week, everyone. If you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at bloodydisgusting.com or on Twitter at HauntedMag. Xena can be found on her own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at Lovely Xena on Twitter. And you can hear me on my weekly Horror Narration podcast, Creepy. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast app, or feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out all things Bloody Disgusting on TikTok at BeDisgusting. So for this year, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I mean, I'm Xena.
There is no doubt. No one has ever doubted that. Xenovember taught us a lot.
Is.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, and watch something you love. Just make sure it's something bloody. Happy New Year.
Yay.